All right, today we are going to talk about ISIS. I know that anytime that people tune into her, they start to already open up their heart chakra and feel this amazing love energy that ISIS represents. But as we know, history is not quite that linear. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the bigger picture here, the kind of morphogenic field of what that represents, but also more of a personality components and how all of that fits in a little bit into human history. All right, so first of all, let's start with Isis is not actually her real name. Her name in Egyptian is Aset. So Aset means the queen of the throne or the lady of the throne. So she's the royal goddess of essentially that unconditional love energy. In Greek translation, Aset became Isis. So everybody knows her as Isis, but actually the original being is Aset. So Aset as a netter, as a being that netter is an Egyptian term for not quite God, but more like a morphogenic field composite of a specific parameter of godhood. So think of it like a demigod, like an idea of not the one divine God, but smaller portions or representations or faces or facets of God from the perspective of Egyptian culture, ancient Egyptian culture. So from that standpoint, the netter of Isis or Aset represents unconditionality of love and also transmutation, also love magic and remembering this positive magnetic energy when you're able to almost like with love remember the past and then utilize the power of the past into creating your future. So that bridge of loving the past into the future. Isis as a netter, as a concept, was used to help heal past pain, you know, like experiences of, you know, somebody that maybe you hate in the past or somebody who caused you a lot of pain or whatever. That, I mean, we now understand that whatever the pain that we have experienced due to someone else's actions or inactions is part of our learning. So in Egyptian tradition, it was seen as, okay, this has occurred, but how do you like forgive that person? So their experience of forgiveness, remember this is like way before Christianity. So their experience of forgiveness was actually remembering with unconditional love. That's how, like, they didn't have a term for forgiveness. That was their way of utilizing that concept. And Isis as a netter represented that frequency. So that means that you can heal your past by lovingly remembering it and loving yourself in the past through the experiences where you didn't get that love energy. Because from the Egyptian standpoint, everything is holographic. So past, future, it's all kind of, you have access to it all from any perspective you want. So Isis holds the power of divine feminine support and nourishment energy. And she's also representing the sexual mystery. That's the love magic. So that's the ability to utilize and weave the energy of sexuality and love into something that then creates an opening of the portals multidimensionally. So she's a goddess of divine love and healing and magic in general. And as I said, forgiveness through this loving the past remembrance. So the original representation, she and her beloved brother and husband, Amun-Ra, and they lived happily ever after. This is the story that most of the time you don't hear, but that's the original story. And they practiced that love magic and they utilized the two polarities. They both essentially ascended in the pyramid ship out of here. So it's kind of like the original blueprint for the story later on about Isis and Osiris. So originally it was Isis and Amun-Ra before Osiris was even invented. All right. So human beings mostly know Isis from her third incarnation in Egypt, which is that Isis-Osiris story. So she was a sister wife of Osiris, the king of Egypt, and she was also mother of Horus. So this is how she's typically remembered as a more personal sense. Osiris's brother, Seth, killed him, dismembered him, threw his parts of the body all over Egypt, and Isis, in her love and connectedness, went all over Egypt, gathered different components of the body of her husband, put them together to whatever degree, and then the result was that she impregnated herself with his sperm to create Horus. So that became the Horus, the Avenger, was born from that. And also that Osiris then became the ascended god, because by putting him together, so that's the feminine energy, putting the masculine components together, right? That's the mystery. He then went through the pyramid portal, which is the amplification of the internal understanding, awakening, and multidimensionality, and was able to ascend. So this is representation of divine love beyond competition, beyond petty envy, jealousy, something that can make everything whole again. So that's the third story of Isis and Osiris in Egypt. That is the very popular one that a lot of Egyptian culture incorporated in what is more known of it. So when I speak of ancient Egypt, I speak of like way ancient before the pharaohs. Then there were other layers and other layers. Then eventually, at about 3600 BC, there were beginning of pharaohs, and at 3200 is where BC is where we start to have pharaohs and so on. So this third story of Isis and Osiris was very recent in history then. So the entire Egyptian culture, as in what we can see in the art of ancient Egypt, is based on that concept where Isis is seen as the one who, with her divine love, is able to put her husband together after he was murdered by his jealous, envious brother, and through that process kind of make whole again something that then becomes even more by them connecting and bringing in the third component, which is the child, the Horus representation, right? So I'll talk a little bit more about incarnations of Isis so you can understand what I'm talking about. So she had three incarnations, and I'm using the word incarnation more as a concept here, in ancient Egypt. The first one, that's the original one, where Isis was an actual person. She was not human, she was Syrian, she was from the sixth dimension, she came here by the means of actual spacecraft, which looked like a pyramid that landed in Rosetau, which is what Giza Plateau is nowadays, as we know it. So she came as part of the delegation. She was not alone. Her mate or partner was Amun-Ra. Amun-Ra is a hidden light. That's what that means. So she was the hidden love, in a sense, and he was the hidden light. Why hidden instead of obvious? Because they were here as teachers and as the ones who were component of the experiment that Syrian culture was doing with humans by being able to connect to us and help us understand reality and teach us something. They were not gods to us. They never played gods. Syrian beings never played gods to humans. So all that projection of authority about like, oh, you help me, save me, whatever, that happened way, way, way later when human consciousness went down and the Anunnaki and other beings came here. Way before that, so we're talking about 20,000 BC. This is where the original Syrian delegation was here. So one of the people in that delegation was Isis, or Aset. Another one was Amun-Ra. They were a couple. They were ministering here together, doing work together, teaching together, and so on. So the entire Syrian group left in 10,800 BC. So they were here for almost 10,000 years, and participated in a lot of cultures, actually, not just Egypt, but they stayed within the Egyptian territory of Rosetau. And eventually, they left. The only being that stayed when the change in consciousness happened, when we had that big adjustment in 10,800 BC, was Sekhmet, which is a whole other story. So she was the only one that remained behind. Pretty much all Syrian beings except her, including Isis, have left. So the first sort of memory of human beings related to that frequency of unconditional divine love and feeling so connected and feeling so like you're part of this universal something that feels so good and you're enveloped in it that they got by listening to Isis teachings. I mean, she's a person, but she represented that and she taught that. That started to show up in the planetary morphogenic fields. So she was one of, there were others, but she was one of the beings who encoded into the planetary Earth planet morphogenic fields, which are group consciousness fields, for human beings, not somebody else, but only humans here on Earth, encoded for them the concept of what unconditional love is. Up to that point, there was more like nature experience, an experience of belonging to nature. What she brought in is this multidimensional concept of love and taught that. And some human beings who were able to experience it started to project those out and resonate out into the planetary field. And this is how we ended up with a morphogenic field of unconditional love. Right now, that field is very, very weak, because of so much junk that's been thrown in there of separation and pain and victim-victimizer and so many other fields that pretty much dampened that unconditional love field. But it does exist, it's still in there, and people who are conscious and are able to hold that higher frequency of pure unconditional love and open it up multidimensionally, we're still here essentially amplifying those morphogenic fields that were originally set in motion by these higher beings. So Isis, as the first incarnation, was a Syrian being, Syrian person who came here in her body, in the ship, walked out of the ship, walked here in a third dimension. At that time, the planet frequency was not as low as it is now. So it was almost like 4D or really, really high frequency of the 3D. So her body could still function here. The separation was very minimal, and ministered and taught the higher concepts to humans, and humans out of that got the gift of this unconditional love morphogenic field. So that Isis departed at 10,800 BC. After that, we have what Egyptian people sort of constructed out of that, which is the Neter Isis. So Neter, remember, means representation of God, like a facet of God, like a one of the faces of God. So they kind of blended Isis, the real person, which of course thousands of years passed, so they couldn't, you know, remember anymore that there were some people that came on a spaceship. So instead, it just became like, yes, this was some divine, loving goddess person. So she became the Neter of this unconditional love and the sexual magic and the remembrance, forgiveness, and all these things I said earlier. So that is the morphogenic field imprint of her that still remains, but it's in the form of the cultural image as a Neter, as a god. And then the third incarnation, which is probably how she's known the most, is her and Osiris. Now, that Isis had nothing to do with the original Isis from Sirius. This Isis was actually a Mesopotamian person in a body that arrived to Egypt when Mesopotamia, Sumer at the time, expanded and Egypt became one of its kingdoms. So we're talking at about 4000 BC, just before the pharaohs in a known sort of linear history. So maybe 1,000 years or a little bit before. So this is the time where Enki, which is one of the Sumerian gods who's more progressive, who's actually a person, who's not human, he's Anuna. So he's a progressive Anuna though, and he brought in all sorts of healing templates and understanding of multidimensionality, and he tried to empower human beings when the rest tried to take the power away and so on. So Enki eventually fled to Egypt, and his followers, Shemshu-Hor, followers of Horus, which he represented actually, Osiris, they became kind of the ruling class, I guess, of the territory that is now known as Egypt. So Isis at that time obviously was not the original Isis. It was a person also from Mesopotamia that came along with Enki and stay there in the role of Isis, so she took on that image. Now, genetically, as I said, Enki is Sumerian, and this other woman who took on Isis, they're not human beings. They are partially Anuna, partially Syrian. So if the original ISIS has been fully 6D Syrian being in Syrian body, these two were partially Syrian genetics in the Anunna genetics. So that combination, still not human, but it gave them multidimensional access. Enki had more access, ISIS actually had a little less. And Osiris and Isis is how they became known in Egypt. And then the history repeated itself. A person also from Sumer, known as Marduk, who is a relative of Enki and Isis from Sumer, came over to Egypt after Enki, who ran away, Osiris, and ended up killing him. And then Isis supposedly put him back together and helped him ascend. Now, in reality, there actually is a Osirian temple, which is the place where the body of Osiris or Enki has been brought in and where this process has occurred, as putting him together, where she attempted to utilize her magic, which actually technology at that time, to put him together. To my knowledge, it did not actually work in a sense how they planned, so that story of him then being ascended and walking again and whatever, that didn't actually happen. What has happened is more that he was able to shift consciousness-wise and remain a person. So it's sort of a odd place because he as an individual soul still exists but does not have anymore that body. And I think he actually had some incarnations again, so he has been in different bodies, but he remained with the consciousness intact, kind of like me. Like, this is part of my contract, is that I did not forget any previous lives. I kind of have this continuation, so because of it I never saw myself as a Eugenia, as like, this is me. It's like, no, this is just one of the forms, one of the bodies, one of the stories, but I remember all the other ones. So all those other identities feel just as real to me as this one. I'm just not in those bodies. So that is not a typical contract. That's actually usually very detrimental because you can go crazy if you don't have proper structural electrical system to be able to compartmentalize it all. Otherwise, you're just gonna start to feel like you have multiple personality disorder. So the reason that Enki was able to do the same thing is because he's structurally really, really strong. Like, he knows what he's doing. So anyway, this is a little side step here from Isis. So her role in connection with Sumerian Enki or Osiris in Egypt has been that she supported the process of putting things together. So the story of Osiris and his brother Seth, which is Marduk, and them fighting, they all are Anunna essentially. Marduk is full Anunna. They wanted to, the problem was is that they wanted to control humankind. And Enki actually wanted to empower humankind. So Osiris represents the uplifting of consciousness, while Seth or Marduk represents ruler, controller. He wanted to control. So that's the struggle. The controller ended up killing the one who wanted to empower, but then the unconditional love, Isis, came in and healed the process and allowed the journey of empowerment continue, even though human beings at that time were very much in the victim consciousness. So for to summarize here, because I know I threw a lot of things at you here, three incarnations or versions of Isis. The first one is where she is a multidimensional, six-dimensional being from Sirius who came here on a starship with her beloved brother, husband, mate, Amun-Ra, and together they have been working with humankind to uplift the consciousness and to co-create that pure, unconditional love morphogenic field. The second version of Isis is the Neter, or the god of Egypt, which is the representation of the very morphogenic field that originally has been built by the real Isis. And the third, more known incarnation of Isis is actually not Isis at all, but a person who took on the image of Isis because that's the name that was known in the land, and her mate, Osiris, who was actually Enki, took on the name of Osiris because by that time Osiris has been seen as somebody that is a mate of Isis culturally. So they sort of like played the roles. They named themselves as in what culture already known. And then they had their own struggles, and out of that came hidden empowerment. So the power of that third story is that even though overall the victimhood occurred, even though overall humans kind of lost the power, there was still some forces underneath that rooted for humans to stand up and be powerful again. So it did not completely erase that ability of humans to actually be powerful. It actually created a secondary kind of a behind the scenes backup. So that's what the third ISIS represented. So now you can see how does that apply to you. If you're looking for the connection with owning and fully embodying unconditional love, that's tuning into the very first ISIS, the original six-dimensional ISIS. If you're looking for connectedness and unified unconditional love energy on the planet to help you feel like you belong, like this planet has the capacity to hold the higher harmonious frequencies, then you want to connect to the second version of Isis, which is the Netter of Egypt, the god of Egypt, which is concept, not a person. And if you're looking for unconditional love support in a moment of difficulty, like when you're feeling like you're collapsing, your self-worth is low, or somebody hurt you, or you're experiencing some pain from the past, and you want to utilize that energy, like, hey, there's somebody who's on my side, that unconditional love that's got my back, that's going to help me do the correct thing, do the thing that is more beneficial and is from the higher self, that will help me connect to my higher self, then you, in a sense, using the representation in a third version of Isis. So this is going to conclude the story of Isis and a little bit of her actual representation here, and then we'll go into meditation when we will literally connect to those energies.